Transmitting from South Central Texas since 2007, this is Anomaly with Jen and Angela, the halfway point between muggle and geek.
Anomaly, something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
Hello and welcome to the Anomaly Podcast. My name is Angela, and when I first auditioned for BFA acting, not only did I fail to make the program, I went up on lines on my own monologues 3 times for the biggest audition of my life and wasted an entire year. But the next year, I went back, prepared, and nailed the audition, and I am an anomaly.
Hi, I'm Jen. In high school, my guidance counselor told me I couldn't take advanced algebra because I would fail. I passed by the skin of my teeth, got a scholarship, went on to college, and made the dean's list my first semester in school, and later the president's list, despite being weak in math. I'm not a quitter. I am an anomaly.
That was a mouthful.
It was a mouthful.
But you were supposed to admit a time that you actually failed, not when someone...
I did fail. That's why she told me, because I was horrible in math.
But you triumphed. I actually
okay, you
screwed
pooped
the pooch.
All over it. You pooped all over it.
You can cut this out. I'm just making the point. I admitted to something I really screwed
but
up.
You don't understand the background. I did fail a lot. And plus, I have numbers dyslexia. It's a real thing.
Right.
And I do have it. And that's why I'm weak in math. I transpose numbers. I sometimes mix, even though I know the difference between,
also,
between
you do that
left
with
and
dates.
Right.
You
yes,
know,
I
dates.
Do. I do it with dates.
Mm-hmm.
And I have showed up like a day early for parties.
You really have. That is a true story, folks.
It is legit. And so that's
I knew that, but
reason.
I wasn't going to bring that up. That's yeah. really interesting.
And you know, a lot of creatives have dyslexia. I can read fine, but I mix numbers up, transpose them.
You know
them
what?
Out.
This actually goes into the next time we do a discovery review.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It certainly
so we should
does.
Kind of bring that back up again would
yeah.
be great. So why are we talking about screwing up?
Well, this episode of Anomaly is about Captain Marvel, which we just have recently seen. That chick gets up and keeps fighting.
She does.
Even though she fails, even though people tell her she's not good enough, she's like, oh yeah.
That is really true.
So, and we're all capable of that. And that's the beauty of the movie. It just shows you that you are the master of your circumstances, right?
That is really true. I mean, there are so many, anyway, I don't know how we want to do this, but like, I felt like there were a lot of amazing themes that got kind of ticked off in this movie. There were so many things that I feel like have not been discussed the way I want them to be discussed in movies that I think were so cool about Captain Marvel.
Let's do a spoiler-free review first so that the people who haven't seen it can get our take on it, and then we'll talk in depth about it. But we'll sound the spoiler when we talk in depth, so don't worry.
Yeah, because I was already ready to get there, so I was like,
oh yeah, let's go! So,
yeah.
I enjoyed the movie a lot. I had no preconceived notions. As most of our listeners know, we didn't read comic books growing up. For me, there was a reason for it. It's because I am an artist. I spend most of my time looking at the art and not reading because I either have to read it or look at the art. I can't do both because I'm judging the art. I'm not enjoying the story if I look at comic books. And so it's hard for me to read those. I went in not knowing much about Captain Marvel. You know, I didn't have any anticipations. Zero judgment. I just went in and I had fun. And I found that Marvel finally made up for its lack of an equivalent to Wonder Woman in the movies, you know? Because I don't know enough about Captain Marvel, I didn't know that there is a series where Captain Marvel started off as male.
Oh,
and then
yes.
somewhere along the line in the comic books, there's a version of the female Captain Marvel.
Yes.
And that's what this movie is based
Did
on.
Did you go to Alamo Drafthouse?
No, I went
oh, okay.
to
the One of the
Starplex.
Cool things about going to Alamo Drafthouse mm-hmm. is they do those 30 minutes of just weird movies.
Uh-huh.
Before, you know, those clips, they clip those together. If you're the person who makes those, I think we should get that person
oh,
on.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the awesomest awesome. Thing. It's like such a strange thing, but how cool to be that guy or girl mm-hmm. or whoever you are. Anyway, and they actually went through the different versions before the show. that was very enlightening. Now, this is part of the MCU, so it introduces her in the way that they want her to be introduced, you know, to this particular story.
Yeah.
But it showed kind of the different incarnations. And I think she was called Miss Marvel or Marvel Girl for a while. And then the other Captain Marvel became Shazam. And so Shazam is another movie that's coming out, but it's not connected to this at all. But it just so happens that the old Captain Marvel became Shazam. So that was kind of a weird thing. So I don't remember like every single bit, but it did go through her different incarnations. And then she finally became Captain Marvel. And somehow it's also connected a bit with Jean Grey in some spaces, the X-Men. Jean Grey and Phoenix and Captain Marvel. So there's all these different like versions of her that have been there. But then this one, the one they're using for the movies is this one. Anyway, sorry.
No, that's good background.
Well, and also they've been teasing a lot because the thing I know the most about her is that, well, she's somehow the one who's going to be able to beat Thanos. Like it's sort of interesting to me that they're putting her here so close, you know, right after Infinity War, going into Endgame. Here's this like random backstory. Not that I didn't want to see this movie. I totally did. But it's such a strange like stop because of all the things that are about to happen. Like, who knows what's going on, right? Anyway, and so it's like, so we're going to stop and like, what? What's that? What? Where do we get to the part where we're fighting and we get everybody back? That's what I want. And of course, I don't know what's going to happen in game. No one does. That's the only thing I know about her is somehow she helps fight. I don't know.
I talked a little bit to our friend Stephanie about this movie, and she saw it before me and you. She said, go in there and watch it and tell me if you come away with an understanding of how she got the name Captain Marvel, because they did not address that. Marvel belonged to another person. And well, so I still don't know why the character Captain Marvel has that name unless she took on the persona.
We need to discuss this in the spoilery version and part of this discussion, because I think I understand where it came from. I think that that goes too far into the story. So my non-spoilery review, which is the greatest name ever, and we need a logo for that. get on that, Jen.
Okay.
You need to art.
Yes,
art for
I need
me.
To art.
I thought it was awesome and it definitely lived up to the hype. I think as far as like the Marvel movies go, and I do agree that it was a good answer to Wonder Woman as far as, you know, it's weird how Wonder Woman is so great, but it's really great because DC has had lots of movies. And so for something in DC to not only be so great, but also do this awesome woman power story with Wonder Woman, I think it was just amazing. And so I definitely think this was a good answer to that. I agree. I think that the fact that they concentrated so much on her character and her character development and all the themes that were presented around her was really good. But, this is not a criticism at all. I think as far as like overall enjoyment, overall awesomeness of the movie itself, it's in the middle high end of the pack for Marvel movies, because like I came out of some of these MCU movies like, oh my gosh, that was awesome. You know, what did I just watch? And when I came out of Wonder Woman, I mean, I cried all the way through the movie the second time I saw it. Like the minute I saw little baby Diana coming up, I was like, I took my mom to see it and I'm like crying with my mom and I'm like, in this movie, like, I think I would enjoy it and I think that my mother would enjoy it and I really like discussing it more. I think some of the points that were raised, I'm more excited about discussing with you intellectually over tea or wine or whatever we can drink now. So thematically, I thought it was kind of better in some ways. But as far as overall, like, I just didn't get that punch at the end.
Yeah,
like, I got a couple of good moments that were really great, amazing moments. But I just wanted something. And I agree.
There was something missing.
There was something missing. And I don't know. And the actors were great.
They
I
were
mean,
awesome.
Like, I didn't have any problem. I mean, I thought that there was a cool twist. I'll say that. Not a spoiler, but there is a little bit of a twist. I thought that was a good idea. But it wasn't like, oh my gosh, that was awesome. It was like, I see what you did there. Like, I understand what the meaning of that was. It's almost like an academic movie. I don't know how to explain it. When you saw Thor Ragnarok, didn't you come out of there like,
yeah? Yes. Well, you know, it was fun, but we also know the character. And I was thinking about this when you were talking about how it doesn't measure up quite to Wonder Woman. I was wondering if it's because we have more knowledge of Wonder Woman and we grew up with her and we just love her deeply as a character because we always just looked up to her.
We start from a different place with Wonder Woman,
is your point. Yeah, Captain Marvel's new to us and we're just getting to know her. There was a lot of real powerful, interesting things that happened.
Yes.
But still, there was something that I wanted that wasn't... This was a fun, solid movie and I enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I'll watch it again. I'll watch it again.
But yeah. There was something...
Oh, there was something.
Something missing and I can't put my finger on it.
Yeah. But again, like if I were to write a paper about Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, Captain Marvel would be a better paper. I know that's such a weird way to describe it.
I could understand that.
Like, yeah. I think that point for point, it discusses things that are so much more important and I think wins in a few categories. If I were to like do this algebraically.
She is the first Gen X character.
Yeah.
And I love that because everybody else has been kind of like millennial age or World War II. Or that's an angle I really loved was that she was a Gen X character. And she's played by a young woman, but the era was home for me. You know, them
at
the computer trying to load that software. And it's like, oh my gosh.
The love letter to the 90s stuff was amazing. You know, the flannel around the waist and those little things and the music, the soundtrack was amazing. Spotify has a playlist.
I think
good.
Nine Inch Nails was a little bit later.
No.
Then when they 89 was when when they found her and she was wearing a Nine Inch Nails shirt and I was like, hey, that came along a little bit later.
Well, Nine Inch Nails is definitely mid 80s is when they started.
Okay, so
It is just Trent Reznor. But yeah, no, I remember listening to Nine Inch Nails when I was a freshman or earlier. So, and it had already been out for a while. So that was like 1990. Yeah. I only know these things because I live with the ultimate music hipster. I don't claim any of that knowledge on my own, but I do know that for sure.
Closing thoughts for non-spoiler review.
That it's definitely worth seeing. And obviously, it's important to watch before you watch Infinity War. I mean, not Infinity War, Endgame.
All right. So now let's spoil it.
Help us stay behind the mic and on the internet by doing one of the following. Tell your friends. Shouting about an episode on social media or sending a friend an email are great ways to share the love. But telling a friend isn't as easy as you might think because a lot of people these days still don't know what a podcast is. You may just have to grab your friend's phone, download a podcast app, and then subscribe them to Anomaly and all your other favorite podcasts. You can also help monetarily. Give $5, $10, or more dollars a month, and in return for your kind donation, you'll get the opportunity to be on a guest roundtable episode. And we'll also send you the full version of our original Anomaly intro, television segment, and outro. That's original Texas punk, y'all. It's a win-win. All you have to do is click on Donate at the top of our show notes or go to anomalypodcast.com and click on Donate at the top of the page. That's anomalypodcast.com. Thank you so much for listening, subscribing, and supporting Anomaly. We love you, people.
Oh, yeah, we're going to spoil the crap out of this. I mean, that's the point, right?
Yeah.
That's why you were all here.
What were you going to say? You were saying that if you wrote a college paper...
Right.
...on the difference between Wonder Woman and Captain Marvel, the Captain Marvel angle would be more interesting, and I would like to know more about that.
Well, I didn't write all this up because
lazy. We don't have time.
However, these are the things. One, there was no love interest.
Right.
Which I adore because that was not the point. Especially having a female lead and not having a love interest at all is amazing. They kind of played with the idea of the love interest at the beginning, but it never even got close to that. So that is one thing that I would explore. The other thing I would explore is this whole idea why we started the podcast the way we did, the idea of failing, screwing up, messing up and doing something, either trying your best and failing or actually failing because you didn't do what you were supposed to do and then getting back up and continuing to keep going. The other thing is this idea, you know, she was taught and believed from the time she was turned, basically. So because she had lost her memory, right? And she was fighting for the Kree. So from the time that she kind of woke up, she was told that she was less than and that she just needed to control this little bit of power that she had. That was pretty powerful, but the only reason she had it was because of whatever was in her neck. You know, this is all you are, and you're going to have to learn how to control it. And it's your fault if you can't control it, and it's your fault if you can't use it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, what happened, what was really happening is they were keeping her down to control her.
Yeah.
She was more powerful than she thought she was. And that is the nutty thing. And it's like, that is such. And they were trying to use her. And so that's like a total feminist issue. This is a feminist movie. Let's not split hairs. And everyone should come into their own power. But this was specifically about women. You know, not only was she more powerful than she thought, she was way more powerful than she thought and possibly more powerful than anyone. This is the moment, not just of Captain Marvel's beginning, but also of Nick Fury, Coulson, S.H.I.E.L.D. coming into its own, and the Avengers all starting. Yeah, technically, Captain America is the first Avenger, quote unquote, but that's a little bit different. And the idea that you don't always know who the good guys and bad guys are.
Right.
In life or in movies. And at the end of this, really like seeing the bad guy from Rogue One. Wasn't that cool? So anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I started off thinking, wait a minute, that's the Kree. They're the bad guy. What is going on here? They seem nice, you know? Mm-hmm. So I was suspicious at first, like, what is going on? And then I started to trust the story, you know, and what they were presenting was that the Kree at this time were the good guys.
Right.
And then when the twist happened, I felt like they duped me.
I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, it was perfect. Yeah,
it was brilliant. And also, they look terrible. Though they look like orcs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The whole movie and everything we've ever known about how fantasy works is these guys are definitely terrible.
Well, and their civilization is so utopian.
Yeah, oh, the Kree civilization.
The Kree civilization looks utopian.
And the word Skrull, I mean, and Skrull sounds like skull. It sounds like really terrible. I mean, we're talking like, it's like Skeletor. It's like, that is a bad guy.
Well, and the fact that they can shapeshift makes you mistrust them. So it was a great angle to
I love that. Yes.
Us with. And Jude Law was really good. And
he was.
And I think the first movie I saw him in was Cold Mountain. So he's come a long ways from doing like romantic period films
He also went kind of a long, he had these like long breaks between doing movies too, but he looks awesome.
Well,
he's
he
great.
Plays he Dumbledore good, in Fantastic Beasts, you know, the.
Oh, he does. That's right. I do
Crimes
remember
of
that.
Grindelwald.
Grindelwald.
So, sidetrack. I loved the origin story of Nick Fury too. Mm-hmm. And I always wondered how he lost his eye. And that was
the Flurkin.
Perfect.
That's amazing.
Of course it's a cat.
The cat is my favorite. That cat was my favorite thing. That was awesome. That was so funny. Fury was so like, oh, did you be little kitty cat? I can see Nick Fury being a cat guy. Like,
yes,
I can totally
definitely.
See that.
Well, also, you get to see that he wasn't always the Nick Fury we know in the Avengers movies. So there must have been some time to evolve to that
in between. Yeah.
So he starts out more like lighthearted. I almost saw him as a man in like the Men in Black.
Him and Coulson
was like the Men in Black from the movie Men in Black. He was almost like that.
Yeah.
That was his role in S.H.I.E.L.D. almost, but just his personality was so different from what we knew. So Aaron was confused. I kept having to tell him, this is the past, buddy. You know, this is not, you know, when everyone turns to ash. This is like years and years, years ago. We're going to get to that point, but we're going to start in the past and we're going to work our way up. Because he was really confused. Poor kid.
Yeah. And that's why it's like, I mean, I get it because I feel like, I don't know, I almost agree with Aaron in that it isn't that confusing, but at the same time, it's like it does feel like a weird. If you were to watch all the Marvel movies like in order of release, if you were binging them or whatever, it would seem like a weird break to like watch Captain Marvel right now.
Let's talk about what we think may have been missing in the movie. What that little ingredient is. It's like they baked a great cake and it was so delicious. There was an ingredient that was missing that made the cake not as big, like it was
just
more
wasn't,
dense and a little smaller.
You know what
it
was? It's funny that you say the word big because I feel like it's kind of like when you get the mini cupcakes, they're just as good as
the
regular cupcakes.
There's just not enough.
It's just not enough. And I'm not blaming anything specifically. Maybe there's some kind of grandiosity. And you know what was really weird is that when they did the twist with the scroll, I feel like maybe part of that, I was nervous for too long that they were actually betraying her.
That the shapeshifters were?
The shapeshifters. Like, I wasn't really convinced that the Kree were all good, because obviously after I saw Ronan in play, I knew that. I mean, just because the Kree may be worse than them doesn't necessarily mean they still mean no harm to the Earthlings. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like, and you've seen the kind of power that they have. Like, I mean, and obviously because of the way the movie ended, they wanted us to believe them and trust them and be on their side, just like they wanted Captain Marvel to be on their side. But I feel like maybe that's where the writing kind of lost me a little. I feel like I needed to be convinced more as an audience member a little earlier. That trepidation kind of kept me from like buying in until I saw the little kids. Like that literally was the first time I was like, okay. I feel like there needed to be more eye winking at the beginning about the true nature of the Kree. Like you said, like she's the hero. We know she's the hero and she works for these guys, you know? So it's like, okay, well, this is a different time and place. So it's like S.H.I.E.L.D. gets taken over by Hydra at some point. So S.H.I.E.L.D. was the good guys. They became bad, you know? It's possible that that could, same thing could be happening here. We just don't know. But I feel like that was maybe where the storytelling got funky to me. And I'm like, these people have proven to be super brutal.
Right.
You know, the fight scene on the train and all of this. But that might not be the only thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, again, I want to reiterate that I love the movie. And I think
it's a
really solid movie. But
yes.
But in granted, like we said, we have some relationship with the Wonder Woman character that we grew up with and we love and adore, and Captain Marvel we don't know, and so we're getting to know her, and maybe that has something to do with it. But I feel like the Wonder Woman brand has been developed solidly, and we know what she stands for.
Right, and they don't really have to explain it.
They don't have to explain it.
They
She's
didn't
about
have to
love.
Tell us.
She makes decisions based on right and wrong, and
yeah.
It's not all about fighting. It's about standing up for people who don't have the ability to fight for themselves. I love that about Wonder Woman. Plus, the theme is just a through line throughout the whole film.
And to your point, because we know her, like, that's not anything that has to be explained. That's just, we accept that as a thing before anything even starts.
Right. And so we come at Captain Marvel, and she starts out on the wrong team. She's fighting for the Kree. From the beginning, it feels wrong. And there was just a wrong feeling for a long time until we get almost to the end of the movie. And there are very good moments, but they're all about fighting and about proving herself. Whereas Wonder Woman is like, this is the way I am, you know, and I don't have to prove myself to anybody. You know, when she's wanting to get out of the trench, just follow.
There was like a higher purpose.
Just follow me. You know, that's all she's just very nonchalant about it. Whereas
it's so badass.
The other thing about Wonder Woman, the difference that is not as good as Captain Marvel, is that Wonder Woman was
a god
set aside here to save the world.
Yeah.
You know, whereas Captain Marvel was a regular woman. Just a woman.
Yeah, she was just a person that kind of got in a freak
accident.
And
that is where we all start out. But really, we're proving to ourselves that we can do something. And maybe that's what wasn't as clear to me, whether she was proving herself to others or to herself. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I think that's part of it.
Maybe.
It's kind of like Finn. You know, she's a stormtrooper. The stormtroopers think they're on the right side, especially, and I wouldn't say First Order is really like that necessarily, but you know that the Empire stormtroopers, a lot of them did genuinely think they were on the right side. You know, so it's kind of interesting when you get into that kind of side of it, where if you are a Kree and they've convinced you that you're fighting for what's right, when all of this started to reveal itself, you kind of got the impression that the Jude Law character kind of knew he was a dick, but he was just in it to win.
Yeah.
But does every single person on that team think that? Have they been raised to also think that the Skrull were
they're all
super
confused.
Enemies?
Yeah.
And so it's like, are they just buying into rhetoric that they've been taught, or are they really just assholes? Like, what is it? And so obviously she's been taught this same rhetoric, but she hasn't been in it for that long. Once she starts getting some of her memories back and she learns new information, then things, you know, start to kind of come around. And I realized that for the story, you know, they had to have her in that weird mind thing so that she would start getting her memory back. But I think that like part of this issue, and I keep coming back to this Skrull thing is, as cool as it was that we got this neat transition and now they're really the good guys and, you know, the Kree are really the bad guys, they're presented as so powerful they can shapeshift. They have her held hostage and they're searching her mind with this thing. They obviously have technology as well. So they're shown as a good opponent to the Kree, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, why would we suddenly believe that they are this helpless group of people? I'm just trying to wrap my own brain around what gave me pause and what made me too worried about her.
You know, I had the opposite feeling because it was kind of a hard sell for me that the Krell were, or the Kree were the good guys, because they were freaking me out with their ships as they jump in over the planet. They just look like the Empire, you know,
force
you cannot fight. I was confused for a long time about
that. Yes, but the thing is just that point, though, and I understand what you're saying, but I feel like the point is that it wasn't clear.
Right.
I think that there was just some weird lack of tone. You know, it looks good on paper. Oh, okay, we're going to present these guys as the good guys and these guys the bad guys, and then we're going to switch it. There was some sort of flow issue with the story. It didn't flip at the right time. Now, they were being cruel to her because they, you know, they were just doing whatever they could, you know, to get information from her. And I guess I understand that, but that looked like a horrible torture device that she was in, you know? So it's like, no wonder she wants to fight her way out. No wonder these people hate y'all. Like, this is...
The other thing that put me on edge was the Supreme Intelligence.
Oh, that was a little weird, right?
The computer controls their civilization. And maybe it's because I've listened to the End of the World podcast with Josh Clark that talks about the existential threats to humanity. And one of them is the AI that is constantly being developed that has the potential to self-improve, and it can grow to a point where it makes decisions for humanity. And it's almost like that has happened to the Kree. And maybe the decisions that they're making to take over the entire galaxy is because of the Supreme Intelligence, you know? And it's very scary, authoritative control over their civilization.
Well, yeah. And it's interesting that you mentioned that as well, because I thought that was sort of a clunky part of the storytelling, too. This whole idea about how it appears to you, and they were trying to make a point. And it sounded good on paper, but it just didn't translate.
Right. Why would it appear to you only as something that you know from your past?
It was a storytelling technique to kind of connect her with that woman.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's all that was. They were just trying to connect dots.
And look at it from the Kree's standpoint and the Supreme Intelligence. Why the Supreme Intelligence would appear to her as Dr. Mar-Vell if they don't want her to learn who she was?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Because that set into motion her wanting to know, who is that person and why is it important to me? If the Supreme Intelligence is appearing to me as this person, I need to find out who that is.
Well,
so
the other question is,
whole scenario.
Did they give her amnesia or did she
get
amnesia?
That's another unanswered question.
When she was hit, because those are thematically, those are totally different.
Right. It's kind of important to know.
Yeah. And like until you just said, and that is so true. That's interesting, Jen.
Also, I loved Annette Bening in that role. And
I wanted more
Annette Bening.
I love.
She kind of reminded me of Amelia Earhart in that, didn't she?
She did kind of have that sort of vibe. I agree.
Hair. Yeah. Anyway,
I agree. One of Jim's favorite movies is, I'm so embarrassed about this, Mars Attacks. And she's in that movie and she plays kind of a hippie lady. Oh, the aliens are coming. And she's like sitting in a pool. And we had just watched, we didn't watch the whole movie, but we were watching like some videos and showing Russell the trailer. And it was funny to me because I'm like, this is the opposite of that lady.
Yeah.
This is exactly the opposite. And I also like, too, that she was a woman, you know, because that could have easily been a dude, you know, that character. And so I thought that was kind of cool. Oh.
The Kree kind of made her more powerful. The training in martial arts, because she didn't probably have that level of training as a pilot.
Yeah, no.
And so they kind of made her into, by restricting what she could and couldn't do, by constantly telling her to control her emotions, you know, and keeping her under control, knowing that she was being under control from whatever it was she had, almost created what she became.
So, it kind of reminds me of, well, now that's a spoiler for something else. Egwene, when she gets captured.
Yes.
And she gets trained in stuff that, like, the Aes Sedai would never be trained in.
Right.
And that, like, literally helps her. She was already going to be a powerful Aes Sedai, but, like, that makes her an even better One Power user, I guess, is the best way to say it.
She's referencing The Wheel of Time. That's one of our favorite fantasy books or novel series.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's similar to that, because she would never have been exposed to some of those weaves. Russell's reading them, and so we've been talking about them. I think you're right, though. But I think that they really thought they just had her. Yeah, I don't want to complain about it, because it really is a good movie and I want everybody to see it. But that's why we talk about it, though, right?
Yeah, I also liked her best friend, Maria.
Oh, she was great.
And I love that she was from Louisiana. And oh, did you catch her last name is Rambeau? Rambeau. I guess that's how you pronounce it. It sounds like beau, obviously spelled that way, I think, in French. But
oh, yeah.
So Rambeau. But anyway, I loved their friendship, you know, and it was kind of a sister kind of friendship. And of course, and like I was talking about earlier, the child kind of thought of her as an aunt. But also, I love her 90s haircut.
Oh, yeah.
I love
it. Pretty awesome.
And I just, it was just a very Top Gun kind of goose and what was Tom Cruise's?
Maverick
on its head, you know, as women. And they both having sports cars instead of the motorcycle that Tom Cruise drives. And this is one of the complaints I had about Starbuck.
Mm-hmm.
Because she was supposed to be a fighter pilot, and she was very capable and very tough. Sometimes I felt like, and they overdo the toughness sometimes. Like, they misunderstand sometimes what tough women they make them more masculine sometimes. And maybe there are some women like that, obviously, but also, that's not universally, you know,
I
across
know that, all. But like, I feel like, A, I agree with you, but I also think there is this idea with Starbuck specifically that she was overcompensating intentionally. Like, she wanted to appear like a badass. That was part of her character and part of her character's kind of insecurities and some of her fears and some of her self-esteem issues came through by almost acting like a bully and being like more manly, smoking cigars and like that wasn't something that was
punching
put on
guys
her.
Out.
Like, you know? That she kind of purposely put on that persona, that it was a decision by Starbuck. That's how way I always read it.
I always looked at it as the way writers. the writers were making her, because they felt like in order to be a capable pilot and to survive in this community of male pilots, that she had to be that way almost. I felt that way. That's the impression I was getting at the time. And Carol Danvers is just Carol Danvers.
Herself. Yes.
When she was wearing her grunge outfit and she just, and she kind of had an attitude where her hat was on and very tomboyish or whatever. But
yeah, I
don't know.
I see
maybe that.
That
was a stupid criticism. I don't know. It's just something I've noticed over time that is going away. There's less of the over the top masculine qualities in tough women.
You can still be feminine and be
badass. Like, I'm just noticing the evolution of that in today's it hasn't been that long since Battlestar 2004.
Yeah, but but to be fair, though, as far as women and how they're perceived in culture, I do think there have been dog-year
leaps.
I've even changed my own views of how I view myself and other women in the past 10 years. No joke. You know, I think I've changed how I view women since I had a daughter. You know, Battlestar was 2003 when it first started. You know, it's 15 years ago, 16, 17, something like that. I mean, so that's a long time. I hate saying that because that makes me feel super old. But, you know, and even doing the podcast has helped us really. We always called ourselves reluctant feminists, and I still feel that way to a point.
I have learned more about feminism and the different types, and I think I'm more of a equity feminist than a gender feminist. There's two kind of philosophies on it. Not necessarily reluctant, but we're not like,
hate men. That's one I'm more like, that's one I gave myself. It's not anything official, but it's like, we came into it kind of like that. But when we started the podcast, it's like, one of the things about it was that we're women, we're girls, whatever. And so then it kind of forced us to say, okay, if we're making this from our perspective and our perspective is female, whatever, then we kind of need to think about that. We need to talk about it. We can't ignore. can't ignore the fact that that's who we are and what we represent, right? Because we started the podcast like around 2007. The first like real MCU movie was Iron Man, you know, 2008. Okay, so that's around, you know, the MCU kind of started around the same couple of years. They went from, oh, we get a token badass sexy chick who shoots a gun.
And in high heels.
In high heels, right? Which, first of all, love Scarlett Johansson. Love Black Widow.
Me too.
Nothing about her. But the movie decided, here's our idea about, you know, having a strong woman. We're going to put, you know, Black Widow in there. And in this time, they've come all the way from that to an entire movie only about a woman who is probably the most powerful creature in the galaxy, universe, whatever. And that she's going to change the tide of the entire universe. That's huge. That's a huge leap.
Yeah.
And I don't know that they knew they were going to do that in 2008.
They are doing it to make money, though. So
that's no. But wait a minute.
Butts in the seats.
It is, but true. But like the community, the world, the consumer wants that. They want to see Captain Marvel.
Yeah.
And that's good.
That's good.
That's a good thing. I think that as a whole, we're all doing better, and that makes me happy.
Oh, yeah. And I would love it if Stephanie would cosplay as Captain Marvel.
I think that would be amazing.
I think she could pull off Captain Marvel in the black leather jacket with a 9-inch nail shirt and the shield cap and just go like that.
Well, what I think is we should all dress like
that. Yes. I love it. We should all be Captain Marvel dressed like
that.
We should
all just wear a 9-inch nail shirt. I think that would be my favorite cosplay ever. That would be great.
I
would totally
do it. Just every day. I would
every
wear
day. I'm just going to wear a 9-inch nail shirt.
Oh, and
I'm going to steal gems.
Don't forget the plaid, the red and black check grunge shirt tied around the waist.
Of course.
And Doc Martens.
You got to have your flannel. I really do need a new pair of Doc Martens.
Yeah, me too.
They're so expensive, but you know, we need them.
On the aesthetics of the movie?
Yes.
I love that she could change the color of her costume and she let the little girl program it for her.
And
that she's like, this is more me. You know, it was red and blue, I guess, just very patriotic looking, almost Captain American-esque or Wonder Woman-like. I love that she could do that, you know. But the one criticism is I think Carol should have let the little girl keep her jacket.
I agree on sort of, because I thought that too. Like my initial
instinct. It's more like a passing the torch kind of thing to me would have been that kind of a thing.
There's another thing happening there that the little girl's part of, right? Is that she obviously is part of the de facto family of Carol. Mm-hmm. And she specifically kept the coat for her to give back. And
she didn't stop believing in her.
And she didn't stop believing in her. And also, Carol is finding out who she is again. And that jacket's a touchstone to who she is.
That's true.
And so I feel like by taking it back and accepting it back, I guess, is more how I look at it from the little girl. It's part of her reconciling her old self with her new self so that she can really connect those memories. Because she goes from being a plain old human who's pretty much badass, but just kind of a normal badass. To a, you know, universally crazily powered Kree soldier. Then she has to come back and reconcile those two things. And I feel like the jacket sort of represents that.
I like that. That makes
finding,
sense.
Finding, you know, it's about her kind of figuring that out. Because the thing is now she has context. You know, now she knows she can be lied to by people. She knows she's more powerful than pretty much anyone. Oh, and how awesome was the scene where the guy was like, just fight me without your powers. And she was like, F- you. And no. It reminded me of that Firefly episode. There's a bad guy that's captured Wash and Mal.
Okay.
And he's torturing them. And then he brings in Zoe. You know, you can save one of them. And he's trying to do like this monologue about how hard the decision is going to be. And she picks Wash and she's like, him. He's like, and the guy's like all mad because he didn't get to soliloquy. She's like, him.
You know, I love that you brought up Firefly because we were talking about the evolution of female characters to where they are today and where they started off like in 2006.
And Firefly has all six
Firefly
of them.
Firefly has always been ahead of its time.
Well, yes and no, because it's so funny that you say that about Firefly, because it's almost like the entire evolution is in one show. It's so diverse, but you have like literally a naked chick in a box. And yes, I know you're trying to say something about that, but the naked chick in the box ends up being one of the most powerful, right? But like still it's a naked chick in a box. Then you have Kaylee, who's very soft, and you have, but she's mechanically minded and she's sexually aware. And then you have Zoe, who is committed wife, but also a warrior. And so it's like, and of course, Inara, who is totally accepting of herself and everyone else. And she represents kind of like that perfect version of what we think a woman should be. I'm not saying that that's what it is, but I'm just saying that like it's all four of them are just all of the different ways of women. You know, like it's, oh, I don't know, that's very interesting. I agree with you.
Eventually we're gonna have to review another Firefly episode. It's been too long.
Boom, we missed the most important thing, is this was dedicated to Stan Lee.
I yep. love that.
I had a little moment when he made his cameo.
And they smiled at each other. It was a thank you kind of moment.
I know. It was so sweet.
Yeah. And everybody in the theater, when they saw, I went, oh.
I know.
Everybody. Most of everybody stayed behind to watch the end.
Oh, yes.
But I was wondering.
We didn't get that much information.
No, but it wasn't. And I don't even remember what it was, to be honest.
It's the, I'll say.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah. Remember?
Okay, so at the very end, when she leaves, they have the pager, like the special battery,
mm-hmm.
so that it like will never go out. And basically is like, I get that because I'm super badass that you're going to call me all the time to help solve your problems. Don't do that.
Don't
do that. However, I mean, if there's a real emergency, and I mean a real emergency, Nick Fury, a real one. Then you can contact me on this pager. And that was the conversation, exactly word for word. That was the word for word conversation.
And it was
Captain America, Hulk, and
Black Widow,
right. Just yeah. the three of them. And maybe Ant-Man was there already? I don't know.
I don't think so.
So they're messing with the thing. And, you know, Fury had sent the text or whatever, but they were trying to figure out what it was doing and who was calling, because they were worried of what was going to come, because nobody knows about her except for Nick Fury. Then she just shows up and she's like, where's Fury?
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's pretty much like the whole thing. And I feel like that there was like an end-to-end scene, but it was just kind of a throwaway.
I was looking for the end-to-end scene. We were not sure if we could leave or if there would be another one.
We stayed. We stayed with like the two other nerdy people because Craig told us to stay. And I think it was, oh, that was when they show the cat coughing up the Tesseract.
Oh, I missed that.
It's like an uncomfortably long, like the cat is on Nick Fury's desk going. And it like lasts so, like if you had a cat, you know that sound.
Yes, and you're running to get them out of your living room where there's carpet.
And you're like, oh my God. And then out comes the Tesseract. And he goes, So the Marvel thing.
Yes, Marvel.
Okay, so Fury and Carol are talking about Marvel, the lady who did all this, right?
Right.
They're talking about, they're going back and forth, and he keeps saying Marvel, mm-hmm. and she keeps correcting him and saying Marvel.
Yes.
And they go back and forth a couple times, and then he never says it right. When he's back at his desk and his eye is all swollen, and he's writing about it, and he writes Marvel, she's Captain Carol
right,
Danvers.
Right, yes.
So he named her Marvel.
Okay, so kind of a code name for her.
Not her call sign, but her plane was named the Avenger.
Yeah, I remember
and
that.
And so then that's when he, you know, you see him kind of get that idea, mm-hmm. the idea for the Avengers. And then it becomes his mission, you know, to find these people. That's how he probably finds out from the Black Ops people about Captain America.
So now we're going to have to rethink the order to watch the Marvel movies in.
Dude.
Because just like the Star Wars movies, when we saw Rogue One, we have a new order to put these films in. And I think maybe Captain America first, then Marvel.
I think that the MCU needs to be seen in chronological order. So I agree.
So
yeah,
Captain America, Captain Marvel, then Iron Man, the first film, right?
Yeah.
Because you get to see him kind of putting the team together. Iron Man and Captain America build the team, right? With Nick Fury. Am I right?
Well, Nick Fury's doing it.
Oh, of course. I mean, but I mean, Iron Man is kind of the leader with Captain America and putting...
Right.
You know,
but it's not until, I mean, because Iron Man has been around for a few years before they unfreeze Captain America.
Captain America, right.
So yeah, would you that doesn't happen until Avengers.
Right. So would you see Iron Man 2 before the Avengers?
Yeah.
So Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, then Avengers, the first. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now I'm going to have to watch them all again.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I don't think I have time.
I wonder if we have enough time to watch before Endgame.
I don't have enough time. I'm still two episodes behind on Star Trek.
I know.
Sorry.
No, I'm not judging.
My problem.
Because you were judging me when I was behind. Like, get on, what's wrong with you?
I'm sorry. The problem with me is that I have a television packed with my husband.
Yes, you can't watch it without him.
And I can't watch it without him. And he was, I don't know what he was doing, but he was doing something and we couldn't watch him. Oh, it was basketball. So it's not like a real thing. But it is a real thing because we're basketball people. So sorry about that.
You love you're fans of the Spurs, so you can't miss the game.
We are fans of the Spurs, and the Spurs beat the Warriors last week.
Okay, so listener mail.
Printing out emails. Here come the emails being printed out.
Is his email. Is his name Bill? Yeah, I think so, Bill. Nope, that's not Bill. Bill was trying to convince me to be in his audio drama, saying that I promised to be in it. And I said, what are you talking about, Bill?
Oh, yeah, no.
Bill, I don't remember you, Bill. I'm going to read the one we got recently first so that I'm not wasting your time. The most recent email that we got is from Gerald. And thank you very much, Gerald, for your donation and for sending us an email and for loving Anomaly enough to do that. But he says, I enjoyed listening to the X-Files review of Jose Chung's From Outer Space. I was a regular viewer of this show. I did go back and watch the episode again before listening to your review. I haven't seen Charles Nelson Reilly in years. I reviewed his filmography and discovered he reprised the role of Jose Chung in the episode of the Fox show Millennium. I think one of the advantages of long-running TV series is the ability to present an episode outside the normal tempo of the show. This episode is a good example. They step back and have a little fun with the show theme and characters. Scully's autopsy scene is hilarious. Her comments, how embarrassing, and upon doing the exam, finding a zipper were highlights. I have the X-Files Aliens theme collection of DVDs. I always enjoyed the ongoing alien conspiracy theme of the series, but doing standalone episodes as well. Two of my favorite standalone episodes are Family. This was downright creepy.
Oh,
according
to
Wiki, Fox never rebroadcast the episode after the initial showing. I will never forget the last scene of the brothers getting in the convertible Cadillac, riding away at night to the Johnny Mathis song, Wonderful, Wonderful. I don't remember that one.
Oh my gosh,
I wonder if it's still available to to watch on Netflix.
No, I'm sure that I'm not going to even.
Right, okay.
Like, it's very disturbing. But I remember seeing it, so I must have watched it like when it came out. But yeah, it was.
And then there's Clyde.
It's quite shocking.
Clyde Bruckman's Final Repose. Peter Boyle's portrayal of a psychic was fascinating. He showed a character who could predict your death and the heavy emotional toll it would take. Another episode of the TV series that stepped back and made fun of itself was the episode of Stargate titled 200.
Oh my gosh, I love that episode. I made you and Jen watch it. Do you remember that?
I don't. But we've been rewatching the show, Aaron and I, so.
You've been watching Stargate?
I have.
Oh,
we started
so
at the very beginning.
So have we.
Oh, cool.
You showed Aaron the episode with the boobs?
Well, there's a couple that I thought, oh gosh, this one's a little much.
Well, the first season was on like Showtime or something.
Uh-huh.
So that's why they did that. But like, we just told, the funny thing is that like, I don't really mind Russell seeing that, but I had to warn him, you know, because of his own puritanical sensibilities.
Aaron was just not sure what was going on, so I had to fast forward. Anyway, he said, this one had a TV producer proposing a TV show based on Stargate, kind of a show within a show. Their spoofs of other TV shows using the Stargate cast was really funny, especially the Marionettes Thunderbirds clip. I remember now. I think I do remember. It was a funny, silly
episode. Yeah, it was a funny. And so they had like a teen drama version of the show. And they had like a Farscape version of the show where all of them were dressed like as Farscape characters. It was hysterical. So funny.
On a personal note, David Tennant, Billy Piper, and Freema, I'm sorry, I'm going to get this wrong, Ageman, are coming to Motor City Comic Con in Detroit this May. Hey, he's in Rico's neck of the woods. Wow, I'm a big Doctor Who fan. I'm really looking forward to this one. Always enjoy your podcast. Thanks for bringing back a memorable one, Jerry. Thanks, Jerry. It was very kind of you for doing that. I'm going to look up real quick Sarah's Facebook post, because I think what her comments basically sums up what Anomaly is about. Let me look it up. Wow, lots of people post here. If you haven't joined the Anomaly Facebook group, do it, because it's a very active group. Lots of fun people. Here it is.
See if I can find it.
Here it is. Okay, so this is from Sarah. And she's been listening to our show since the beginning, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I was realizing today that one of the big reasons I can just enjoy my fandoms without stressing of knowing every answer, fact, and detail about them is because of Jen and Angela. I love how you two were obviously huge fans and people to be respected, but you also would say that you don't know everything and you didn't need to. You showed me I was a real fan, even if I didn't know it all. I remember I used to try to memorize every detail, be the first to read that new book, read all the new stuff, the interviews, and it was not fun. Now I just like the dang thing, and it's incredibly freeing to have one aspect of my life where I don't feel the pressing need to try so freaking hard. This is so long and This is so long and sappy, but it's true. Love you, ladies. We love you too, Sarah. Thank you very much for the post. We had two other emails that came earlier, and I will dig those up and read them in the next episode. Thank you all for sending your comments into the show. And if you have any comments that you have been sitting here going, hey, she made a good point, but they didn't think about this, or I totally disagree with that point, you can call in at 432-363-4742. That's our voicemail line. You can send us an audio comment by recording it on your smartphone and email it to us at girlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z on the end, not an S, @gmail.com. And of course, you can shoot us a traditional email at that same email address or at our podcast website at anomalypodcast.com. That's anomalypodcast.com. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and everywhere else you can find your podcasts. If it's just too much trouble, just go to our website and you can click on subscribe and find every place we're available. Thanks so much for listening. We love you guys. I'm glad that Angela's back, because for a while there, it felt like the Jen show. I'm glad you're back.
I like to be back.
I missed you, friend.
I missed you too. Stupid work. It's so lame that we have to work to have jobs.
I wish
and,
we
like,
could do this all live. The time.
That would be more awesome.
Yeah, it totally
all right.
You want to wrap it up for us, or do you have any final comments?
My favorite thing about this movie is this idea of like totally hitting the dust, going down, failing, and then being able to rise to the occasion. I feel like that was one part of the movie that really was very well done. When she's kind of in the middle of that thing, and then she realizes, yeah, falling down isn't the thing. It's about staying down. And it reminded me of a quote that I actually think I first heard on Parks and Rec, but it's a Mary Pickford quote. And it basically is, "For this thing we call failure is not the falling down, but the staying down." I just love the succinctness and beauty of that.
I'm Jen.
And I'm Angela. And you've been listening to the Anomaly Podcast, the halfway point between Muggle and Geek. Man, you could probably split that in half.
I probably could, but I think we would make people mad if we did.
Yeah.
Subscribe for free to Anomaly and never miss an episode. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher Radio, Overcast, TuneIn, Player FM, Radio Public, Castro, Pocket Casts, YouTube, or just make it easy on yourself and go to anomalypodcast.com and click on subscribe. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast.com. Special thanks to Rick Pete, Rick Moyer, Amber and Stephanie for supporting the show. We could not make Anomaly without your generosity. If you can help, go to anomalypodcast.com and click on donate at the top of the page to give a monthly donation of your choosing. Thank you. Hey, if you're looking for more podcasts like Anomaly, check out Treks in Sci-Fi with Rico Dosti. He covers all sorts of science fiction fantasy topics and has been producing his show since 2005. Find him at treksinsci-fi.com and subscribe via Apple Podcasts and Stitcher Radio. For those of you who like Star Wars, you can check out the other show I do with my friends Joe and Chris. It's called the Star Wars Stacks. We primarily talk about old and new Star Wars books, but we're going to start experimenting with tabletop gaming as well. Check us out at Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, and at swstacks.com. My co-host from the Star Wars Stacks, Joe, also has another show called The Upper Memory Block. It's all about DOS and pre-Windows XP gaming. Every month, Joe talks in-depth about a game, game series, company, and/or technology from the era. He's on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Steam, and YouTube, or find him at umbcast.com. One other show you might like is Waffle On with Meds and Kel. The two of them have been waffling on since 2012. Their show is about classic television and films from around the world. Their topics could be about children's shows like Morph or something more mature like a B-horror movie from the 70s. Find them at waffleon.podbean.com or on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher Radio. You're still here? Wow, you must be an overachiever. Are you Ravenclaw? Virtual fist bump. You've made it to the bonus round in the Anomaly credits, and you deserve some outtakes, my friend. Enjoy!
I just want to say that. Now, they totally lost to the Heat and Houston recently, but they beat the Warriors, so I'm going to put that feather in our cap. And the Warriors did not know what to do. They were so pissed. I was very happy.
I stopped being interested when David Robinson and Tim Duncan stopped being an essential part of the team. Also, I loved...
That's like 20 years difference.
I know. Sean Elliott, Avery Johnson.
So were you watching until like
3 years? I was a hardcore fan. Like, I was always watching. And then I just kind of...
You were watching until 3 years ago until Duncan retired? You were?
Pretty much. Not as much as I used to. I get too like emotionally invested, and it gives me like anxiety attacks.
So I had to stop because I heard this awesome study. I heard this awesome study about that that made me very happy. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you know how they always do studies about weird stuff? They did a study on people who are fans, even casual fans of sports teams, you know, in their area.
Yeah.
And they basically showed that when your team wins a game or wins a big game, it has a positive effect on your mood for up to 3 days after the win. But if the team loses, it has no effect, positive or negative. Obviously, it wouldn't be positive, but it does not have the same negative effect when your team loses, because you're, when they lose, you are able to mentally separate yourself from it, and it's not, has nothing to do with you. And so you just go on about your life. But when your team that you care about wins, it gives you a boost. So that's cool, huh?
Yeah. So I guess, would that be in some cities where people riot? Are they riding a high and just go break a bunch of windows and steal things?
Well, because I think that those people would do that anyway, and they're looking for an excuse. I think some people are just assholes. I mean, this can't explain jerk faces.
Like hooligans, soccer hooligans. They punch each other out in the stands.
I think the hooliganism is more about the person or the, you know, I think it has more to do with the culture of that particular society. This has more to do with like a day-to-day feeling of, you know, worthiness or whatever.
Okay.
So I don't know. I thought that was pretty cool. And the thing is I only follow one game and only one team. And I'm just glad I'm not a baseball fan, because that would be very busy. Baseball is everywhere and it lasts like 100 years. It's like 13 out of 12 months.
You know what? I know we're getting way off the track from Captain Marvel.
Sorry.
That's the way we roll because we're anomalies and
we can talk about whatever we want.
Halfway point between Muggle and Geek. But I love playing baseball. I used to play Little League when I was little. I was right field. I could hit. I could catch. I could steal bases and all that stuff. But I didn't play baseball in high school because it was softball and I liked hardball. But anyway, I hate watching it, though.
Oh, God.
Because it takes too long.
It's terrible.
If you're not in the game, you can't. Oof. I can't enjoy it unless I'm playing the game because I want to be out there. Anyway,
that's just a little inside baseball on Jen. I totally get that. I played volleyball. I was very good at hustling. I could really hustle playing volleyball, but I was just never that good at it. That just wasn't my thing, but it was fun. Like, I liked doing it, but I liked doing it for fun. I wasn't really that competitive. I'm not that competitive at certain things. I'm competitive at some things.
I get really competitive. I love you do. Volleyball is my favorite sport. I also played tennis in high school, but I played volleyball in junior high and I stopped because the coach was a jerk and only had favorites that she would put on A
team. I think that happens to everybody.
So, but I was the blocker and the spiker because I was taller and
I was more of a setter.
Really good. Yeah, I see that. We should totally start a game.
And you
we
know
should
what?
Start
I can like get under. I can get under. Like I can hustle. Like I can save a ball. Like I'm very good
oh,
at
yeah.
that. I used
oh,
to
a digger.
Mess
I would
up
like
my knees.
Me too. I would throw myself on the hard floor, the hardwood floor to save mm-hmm. the like,
that's why they gave
it.
You the cool you didn't get the cool knee pads for that?
Yes, I did.
Oh,
they were worn
yeah.
out though. Like I would wear them out to where they were flat. You know, in that yep. one spot no, where your knee hits all the time.
Oh, yeah. That was fun, though. And that was good. It was good team building, even for us nerdy little girls. For me, anyway. I mean, you were very athletic, but not me.
I was athletic, but I was also an artist. And in the end, I chose art over sports. In fact, I like to tell this story to kind of tease my mom about it because mm-hmm. it really was pretty awful of her to ask me to do this. And I don't care anymore. It's just okay, whatever. I wasn't going to be a star player or anything. So I don't care. My brother was more invested. But mm-hmm. she made me quit tennis so I could pick my little brother up from football practice.
Wow.
I know. And I always go, hey, mom.
Dude.
How fair is this? She has no memory. She can't remember doing this. So I can't hold it against her anyway.
Oh, man.
Thanks. While I'm looking up the emails, I have this funny story to tell you about a restaurant in San Marcos that we went to. And if you're from San Marcos, shout out. there is a restaurant that I patroned and it used to be like an AT&T store or something. But now it's like this really trendy, hipster, hippie kind of restaurant. Aaron was in... at my parents for spring break. And so David and I had a date night. And so we went looking for
fancy.
A place. Yeah, we went there. As soon as we pulled up, I was like, Dave, this place is too cool for us. And he's like, no, let's just go. I was like, no, it's too cool. It's too cool. We can't go in there. There were just a bunch of people wearing hipster beards and handlebar mustaches and just all college age. And we walk in and this very cute girl is at the counter. And I said, I'm sorry, we're newbies here. Do you serve food? Oh, yeah, because all they had were beer menus and coffee menus on the wall. There was no food anywhere that I could see. No one was eating. They were all drinking craft beer. And they had really good cheap beer there. Awesome. I recommend
it. I like that.
Yeah. So anyway, her shirt says, dip me in chocolate and throw me to the lesbians. And then it went from there. She hands us a 100% plant-based menu. And there's,
that's awesome.
It's a vegan restaurant. And I was like, I turned to Dave. I was like, I told you this place is too cool for us. And he's like, play cool, man. Play cool. So we had our hamburgers. Quote unquote.
Were they black bean?
No, I don't know what was in the hamburger. It didn't say what they were made of. There's no soy, no GMO, but I still don't know what the hamburger was made of. It was still good.
It's usually black, some kind of bean.
I guess it was kind of red. It was red like raw meat. So I don't know what it was.
Weird.
Dave liked it. He ate it all. I told you it's too cool for us. But the beer, I was like, let's take our friends here for the beer because that was awesome. And
wow.
I had a Middleton Brewery porter, mm-hmm. which was really, really good.